In Jefferson County.
My name is Joy Peterson. I'm here in Evelyn Vito's home in Jefferson County on March 30th, 1983. And I'm going to ask you, Evelyn, if I can have permission to interview you.
Yes, you can.
Evelyn, I wish you would spell your name for our records.
E-V-E-L-Y-N V-I-T-T-I-T-O-W.
Thank you. I think we'll stop just a moment and see if we're...
Well, we've played this back, and I realize that I forgot to say the number of this tape, and I think that's important. So for my records, Evelyn, this is tape number one. We have talked about where you live. We have talked about your name and how to spell it, but I don't believe I asked exactly where you live, or would you rather not tell me on the tape exactly what your address is?
I don't mind.
All right.
14321 Aiken Road, Louisville.
And you live here alone?
Yes.
And your husband was in the refrigeration business here in Louisville?
Yes.
For quite some time, I gather.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you have a family?
I have two daughters. Both have been married. They're married.
Uh-huh. And you have some grandchildren?
I have three grandchildren, one a granddaughter and two grandsons.
Thank you. Evelyn, how long have you lived at this address?
It's going on 8 years.
Where did you live before?
Before that, we lived on Esplanade in the south end of Louisville, which is just around Iroquois Park.
And before that?
Before that was still was Cambridge Drive, which was just a couple of blocks away. We lived there for a few years, and we lived 1 year on Freeman, which was a few blocks away from that. We lived in the 18th and Hill vicinity when our children were small. In fact, that's where I lived when Cheryl was born, my youngest daughter, when she was born. We lived on Galbert there for a number of years. And before that, we lived on Oak Street. That's where we moved when we came to Louisville, in a two-room apartment on Oak Street when we came to Louisville from the country.
And you say the country?
The country to me is Nelson County. That's...
Would you spell that?
Nelson, N-E-L-S-O-N.
Thank
Nelson
you.
County. Bardstown is the county seat, and we lived between New Haven and Boston. my father's farm was there. And that's where we were all born and where we grew up.
How large a family was it?
I had a sister and a brother. And I lost my brother when he was already married and had two children. But he had an accident on the farm, and as a result, he died about a year later. Left two small children. My mother was still living at the time, but my father was already dead. That was a small community. Nelsonville was the name of the place where we lived at that time, which is not even on the map anymore. And
don't worry about your throat.
I'm gonna have to do something about it, I think. It was named after the old Nelson furnace, which was some kind of an ore furnace of some kind, where they got some kind of ore out of the ground before my time. I can just remember them talking about it. But there was a depot there, and the train and the post office and the depot were the center of activities in that community at that time. There was a two-room schoolhouse and one of the largest schools in the county, and two or three grocery stores. And that's where everybody gathered around, and that was the center of activity. And we walked to school mile and a half every day, walked the railroad track, and walked to school. And the church was there, which was another very important part in our childhood. And that's the way we grew up. My sister and brother were both older. And my mother was a very good disciplinarian. She never yelled at us, and I never had a spanking in my life. My brother and sister did, but I didn't. Maybe I was a little spoiled. And but when she spoke, we listened. And same way with my daddy. He was a very kindly man, very tender and kind and gentle. My mother, they were stern and rigid as far as showing a lot of emotion was concerned. But they were stable and they were there, and we were well cared for and probably overprotected. But just about like everybody else in the community.
When was your mother born? Do you know as far as the date of the...
I'll have to look it up.
Uh-huh.
I can never remember those dates. She was born the 29th of January in 1882.
And she's dead now?
Yes, she died in 61.
And your father, you have some records there about him?
Yes.
Or maybe while you're on that sheet, there's more you could tell us about your mother as far as her, maybe where she lived or...
She was, her family was from LaRue County, where Hodgenville is now, out in the country from there. She had several sisters and brothers. Her mother's name was Mary Frances Nichols, and her father was Daniel Elliott.
Would you spell her mother's last name?
Nichols, N-I-C-H-O-L-S.
Thank you.
That was her maiden name. Mother's maiden name was Elliot. Her father was Daniel Elliot, E-L-L-I-O-T-T.
And Nichols was your grandmother's maiden name.
Right.
And Elliot was your mother's maiden name.
Right.
Thank you. That's true.
My brother carried the Elliot for his middle name, and he named his son Elliot.
I'm sorry, did you spell Elliot for us? If you did not, I wish you would.
Okay, it is spelled different ways. E-L-L-I-O-T-T.
And then when she named the boy Elliot, did she use the same spelling as
right.
the
maiden
name?
Right, she used the same
spelling.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And then he named his son Elliot, so we've carried that name on down through the family. They were a very closely knit family, and they had they kept a good family history. They had family reunions, and we had an attorney in Hodgenville that traced the genealogy all the way back to the Mayflower or someplace, which they would go over it in the afternoon after the big dinners and the family reunions, and I was bored to death as a child, but now I wish I'd have listened better.
This attorney was a relative that was doing genealogy research.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah. The book is out of print, and you have to go to the Filson Club to read it. Now it's out of print. But I couldn't have cared less at that time, but now it's very interesting to me, of course.
You were going to tell us something about your father. You had a sheet there on him.
Yes. My father was born in the 24th of April, 1871, and he died in 49, January the 8th of 49. His father's name was James Bittiteau. His mother's name was Elsie Lawrence. His mother died when he was very young. He was next to the youngest child, and there were several children there. and he could barely remember her. He said he could only remember one thing about his mother. He was trying to crack hickory nuts or something, and the hammer hit his mother's toe. And that stuck in his mind. That's all he could remember about his mother, which I thought was very interesting. It must have been painful to him as long as he could live, because he could keep repeating it. So it was difficult for the father, his father, to keep them all together. And as my father grew older, he seemed to be living different places with cousins, and the home seemed to be scattered somewhat. They had a farm just across the river from where our farm was. It was still another county, but it was just across the river. And he never told me much about it. I did learn from other people something about where it was and all. It seemed to be some painful memories to him there someplace. He didn't talk about it. I think my grandfather probably remarried, but he never told us about it.
I think we ought to clarify the fact that your maiden name is the same as your married name, and I'm wondering if the spelling, V-I-T-T-I-T-O-W, was the same.
It is the same, and we were from the same small community, just another, out another direction from Nelsonville, really. And from all that I've traced in the genealogy, I can't find any connection, and all the old folks said that we were not related. Our Vitatos side of the family was three brothers that came down from Pennsylvania. I don't have any dates on that. I could look them up, but don't guess it's that important. And settled around Athertonville, which is still in LaRue County. That's when you had settled with lots of acreage.
I wonder if you'd spell Atherville. I didn't really catch that name of that.
Athertonville.
Spell that.
A-T-H-E-R-T-O-N-V-I-L-L-E.
Thank you.
That's the vicinity that it was in then. I doubt if it was called Athertonville when they settled it, but it was later.
Excuse me.
So this other Vitato, who was my husband's ancestors, settled in another part of the county. And he seemed to come from nowhere, as far as all the old timers are saying, as far as any records that I have traced. Not associated with ours. So I kept thinking if I'd go far enough back, we would find some connection, but I haven't found it yet. But I haven't done a lot of research.
Did you and your husband know each other when you were living down in Nelson County?
Yes, that's where we got acquainted. We didn't go to the same schools, and our community was so small that I didn't know him until I was practically grown. we just didn't move around that much. Our life was so small, our community was so small, that even though it was a few miles away, I really didn't know him until we were grown.
Mm-hmm.
Practically grown, anyway.
I don't think we established when you were born.
I was born July the 20th, 1917. I'll be 66 in July.
And your husband, when was he born?
He was born in 15, June the 8th of 1915.
And you were married when?
January the 11th of 1939.
Were you married down in Nelson County?
Yes, we were. We were married there.
And you said the church played a big part in your life. Could you tell us what church and a little bit about it?
It was the Church of Christ, and it was in Nelsonville. And that's where we went, the church there. When we had the gospel meetings in the summertime, while the preacher always stayed at our house, Mother, all of her life, got up on Sunday morning, would go get a chicken and kill it and dress it and fry it before going to church. We always made cakes on Saturdays, had all of that ready, and she had her dinner ready when we came home from church. and she never knew who was coming. We invited any friends we wanted to, and if there was anybody there that didn't have any place to go, any visitors or anything, we always took them home with us. And the preacher always stayed in our home, which was a great joy to me. I thought it felt like it had really enriched my life.
Did your husband attend that particular church?
No, he didn't. No. He went to the Baptist church. We all visited around during the summer. We'd all go to all the other churches during the summer.
Were you married in that particular church?
No, I wasn't married in church at all. I was married by a preacher in Elizabethtown. We just went over there and got him to marry us. Some friends stood up with us.
I'm wondering about your schooling. You say you went to school there in a small, did you say two-room
school? Two-room school. That was a large school then. Uh-huh. Most of the schools were one-room schoolhouse. We were very proud that we had two teachers in a two-room schoolhouse. That went to the eighth grade, and that was as far as I got. My sister and brother caught the train and went to Boston, where there was a high school. But that was during the Depression when I came along, and they took the trains off. And I thought my life was ruined because I couldn't go to high school. While most kids today would just love to get out of it, I really thought my life was really ruined. I'd get my brother's books and try to study them, but it was a little bit too hard for me to decipher algebra by myself. I later got a GED.
Did you? In Louisville?
Yes.
After you were married?
Yeah. If I had known about the opportunities then that I know now, I could have gone ahead and got more education.
For the sake of our tape recorder, let's say that GED stands for?
It is a high school equivalency.
Right, equivalency. It's an equivalency degree would be the E and D, and I think G is general.
General. Okay.
General equivalency degree. Okay, I just wanted to clarify that. So you got that after you were married?
Oh, yes, not too many years ago. I've taken a few courses at trade schools and a few things like that, bookkeeping and a little typing, and I've done office work and stuff like that. But
how much education did Harold, did your husband?
He had the same, same education. Being a business person, he always felt very inadequate about his education. He was a very confident person. He could do anything. And he had no give up. There was no give up to him. He had the tenacity. But he felt inferior about his education.
Can you recall what your parents' education may have been? How far they went in school?
My father just had practically no education at all. He learned to read. My mother would be about the same as mine. Whatever the grade school was at that time, that's what everybody got. My father didn't get to go to school much. He was an avid reader, and he worked long, long hours on the farm from way before daylight till way after dark. And my memories of him night after night were when he came in, as tired as he was, he would prop his chair up against the desk with a coal-all lamp on it, and read, and read, and read. He read the Bible. He read commentaries on the Bible. And newspapers, if we had them. In the earlier years, we didn't even have the newspaper. But he knew his Bible. And he taught Sunday school classes. And was he listened to... He read and he listened and he learned everything he could. He read slow, but he was never too tired to do that. Sometimes he'd fall asleep reading, but he would come in and read and study every night.
How many acres did you have on the farm?
About 130. About 130 acres. Practically all of it was tillable. Wasn't very much woods on it. Some of the ground wasn't worth a whole lot. We had what's called bottom ground, which is where the river floods it. It was very rich from the deposits of the river overflowing and flooding it. But it was disaster because just about the time you were ready to harvest, there'd come a big flood and wipe it out, time after time. So it was hard to make a living.
We were talking about education a minute ago, and I thought perhaps at this point we'd mention what education your children or grandchildren have attained.
Okay. Cheryl has a master's degree. And
that's your youngest daughter?
The youngest has a master's degree. Iris does not. She just has high school. But she's taken quite a bit of other schooling. But as far as a degree, she doesn't have any other degree. And Danette doesn't either. Danette, my granddaughter.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the other boys, she just has the high school. The other boys are too young.
I'd like to talk with you about the quilting. Perhaps we could start on that segment of our interview now, unless there's something more on the history of the family that you can think might go on this tape. I'll give you a minute to think about that.
I don't think of anything right now that would be of that much importance.
Well, maybe when we're back, when we're into our interview a little and talk about these marvelous quilts that are on your wall, we can talk more about the people that made them, your mother and grandmother.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, let's start at, about your quilting. When did you learn to quilt?
Okay, I learned as a teenager or child at home. We didn't have all the other distractions that people have today, so we were eager to do something. I didn't have any playmates or siblings that were, you know, they were all older. And I was born rather late in my mother's life. So I had somewhat of a lonely childhood, but I also learned to live alone. I don't have to have people around to be happy, which is also an advantage in some ways. But I suppose this late in mother's life, she did a lot of the quilting just for me to learn more than that she needed the quilts. In earlier years, they had to have them. They had to have something warm, and you didn't waste a scrap. And I suspect that she did some of it just for me to learn techniques and all. And we worked on them together. I can remember when I first learned, it must have been 6 or 7 to use a needle, and we pieced carpet rags. And what you do is take up all your old worn, tear up all your old worn out clothing and sew them together about an inch wide, and then sew them together and make long strips, and then they were woven into a carpet. And the floor, the rough hewn floor, had this warm carpet on it.
Well, was it woven like a braided rug, or was it like on a loom?
No, this was woven on a loom. My grandmother had the loom, and we saved all of the scraps, and we'd make it in the widths of that the loom would make, and then sew them together.
How wide do you suppose that was?
Maybe 3 or 4 feet wide.
Yardstick, or maybe a meter
something
stick.
Something like that. And the whole floor would be covered with them, which would be nice and warm. So I learned sewing those scraps together because it didn't matter what size the stitches were. You could, you know, it wasn't particular. Then I went from that to piecing quilts and quilting on the quilts that Mother would have in the frame, back in a corner someplace where it didn't show too much. And I can remember trying to get Mother to thread the needle for me. And she said, no, you learn. And I can remember not wanting to use the thimble. Now you keep that thimble on. And I finally learned to keep the thimble on, for which I've really been thankful as far as quilting is concerned. But I started making my own dresses when I was probably 10 years old or something like that. I don't recall the first quilt that I made because most of them we worked on together. And I don't know any particular one that was just mine. Probably not until after I was married did I make one alone by myself that we didn't both work on. They were just practical quilts, nothing fancy, whatever.
Do you ever recall any man in your life that quilted?
No, I never knew of anyone. That wouldn't have been masculine. That would have been too feminine. Back in those days, that would have been too feminine.
Have there been periods in your life when you did not quilt?
Oh, yes. When I had children, I didn't. I sewed for them all the time, and I didn't quilt then until probably after Cheryl was away from home, before I got back into it. Or maybe while she was away in college. There was a period there in my mind, maybe it was just my mind, when quilts were not stylish or they were old-fashioned and you didn't fool with them anymore. I think part of the reason for that was the materials during that period were rather pale and washed out looking. And they didn't make real pretty quilts. I still don't care for quilts in that period because of that fact. The older ones where grandmother wore the blacks and the dark grays and somber colors could be put together to make very pretty ones, but all seemed like all we had was the pastels, and they just didn't make that pretty of quilts. And then later there was a revival in it. I was into it before the big revival came. But
can you think what, you know, you say Cheryl had gone off to school. Can you think what dates of generally were when you started back quilting? You know, the 60s?
Yeah, I would say so.
The 60s, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I would say so.
How much time do you spend quilting?
Well, it varies according to what is going on in your life. I usually piece a quilt in the fall and get it in the frame to quilt in January and February. Usually that would be a pattern. That would vary, of course.
Does it usually take you a complete year to complete the quilt?
Not a complete year. And that depends again on how intricate the quilt is and how much time you have to give to it. I didn't usually have time to do more than one a year. I did, about 3 years ago, I was able to do two or three wall quilts and a regular quilt that was pretty detailed. A lot of work on it. But that's about the most I've done in any one year.
Where do you quilt?
I've quilted quite a few just with hoops. And I set the frame up in either a bedroom or the foyer, like I have this one here in the foyer. I like it here because I can remember something I gotta jump up and do, or I can watch the television. And in the bedroom, I'm a little more isolated.
What time of day do you usually quilt?
Mostly, I guess more than any other time would be after dinner in the evenings until 10, 11, or 12, whatever.
Do you usually have the television on while you're quilting?
If it's in the evenings, I do. If it's in the daytimes, I don't. I don't watch very much daytime
TV. Do you have
a
radio on then if you don't have the TV on?
Sometimes. Sometimes I do.
Do you usually quilt alone, or are there people in the neighborhood that come by?
Well, on my own quilts, I usually quilt alone. I very seldom have anybody to help me on my own quilts, but there's always projects going. I have one going now, some friends from church who wanted to learn how to quilt. So they come on Mondays, and we've pieced a quilt and put it in and have started quilting on that. And then, of course, the clubs that I belong to, there have been group projects and that I've worked with the group on those.
Well, I'd like to hear more about this group of ladies that are from the church that are quilting.
Well, they knew I was a quilter, and they're into quite a few projects and hobbies and things, so I told them that I'd be glad to get them started. So whoever can comes. There's been five or six. So the number will vary, and one can come one week and another one can't. And
responsible for four or five women that come in from your church and work with you, they're trying to learn how to quilt. And I want to just say on this side of the tape that my name is Joy Peterson, that this is tape number one, that this is March 30th, 1983, and that I am talking to a quilter named Evelyn Vitato. So I think we'll get back to our discussion. Could you go on now with telling us a little more about the ladies that you've gotten together in your church group that are quilting?
As I was saying, I just took a simple pattern and throwed some fabrics out on the table that were somewhat color coordinated and let them pick what they wanted to do, showed them how we make the patterns. And in the first session, I didn't let them make the patterns because I was trying to save time. I had them made up ahead so that they would know how to make them and how to use graph paper to correct them and things like that. And then went on with it there. And each one of them got a block made the first day. And they were so excited about it. All these blocks came together just perfectly, and they were so excited about it. Well, then I was gone for a couple of weeks on a cruise, and when I got back, they had enough pieced up for a top. They were raring to go. So they wanted to set it together with strips, so they would, with sashing, so they would know how to do that. So we did that, set it together with white sashing, and put the borders and everything on it. Did that by machine to hurry up the process a little. So then I'd be gone another week. We have it in the frame now and just got started quilting yesterday. Had to switch it to Tuesday this time because of another appointment that I had on Monday. And they're real excited about the quilting now. Took us a week or two to mark it off for the quilting because I wanted it marked pretty well because they didn't need to concentrate on where they were quilting when they had to concentrate on the stitch. So they're doing real well. And now they can come and quilt anytime they want to. Some of the ladies couldn't come on the Mondays, so they can come other days or evenings if they want to and quilt now. What we're going to do with the quilt, we don't know, but we'll have a quilt. Maybe we'll make one for everybody.
This putting it on a frame, I see you've got a beautiful one on a frame here, so you must have two frames.
Yes, I have. I have an old handmade one in the basement that is large enough you can squeeze a king size on it. It's rather shaky, but it's stout. It won't give way on you. It might fall down, but it won't bend.
Let me hear a little more about this quilt as far as pattern and color that they've come up with.
The colors are blues and browns tied together with a print that has the blue and brown in it. But the pattern that we picked up from a magazine was called Strawberry Patch, but it was in the reds and it had strawberries quilted on it. Well, we don't want to use, we can't name it that, so they're going to come up with their own name, and we'll have something to do with friendship or something like that. So they're going to come up with a name for it.
Because yeah. Browns and blues wouldn't quite do for a strawberry patch.
They don't suit strawberry patch. The pattern was entirely different the way we treated it. We treated it differently, and it has no resemblance to the one in the magazine. It shows what you can do with different colors and different arrangements and stuff.
But each block is the same.
Each block is the same. We put four together and it made another design in the middle, a secondary design, and then set all that together with...
So the sashing is on the outside of a set of four?
Yes.
Right.
There's six sets of four.
Mm-hmm.
And then the border on the outside of that. And we had to improvise, as you often do in quilts. There was this one toast color that we couldn't match any place, that we needed more for the border. So we had to adjust the border a little bit, and they cut out all that we had, and we thought, well, we'll leave this brown off of the part that goes under the pillow. It won't show anyway. But when I got to sewing all those borders on, it came out that I had enough, and I guess there was a half or to 3/4 of an inch left over.
Well, now, would you mind telling me how the expense was shared by the group?
We haven't shared the expense yet. Somebody picked up the batting, and everybody's keeping account of what they put on it. I'll furnish the material. I bought the backing for it, unbleached muslin. And we'll split it so many ways, or if one person gets the quilt, then they will pay for the material that goes in it. None of us are worried about that too much.
So you've got an enthusiastic bunch of
quilters. Oh, they are.
Great.
I took the same pattern to Lubbock with me to visit some friends there a couple of weeks ago. And they were gung-ho on learning how to quilt.
This is Lubbock, Texas.
Lubbock, Texas. I visited friends in Lubbock, Texas a couple of weeks ago, and they wanted me to bring something on that. So I gathered up a few more scraps of material and took this same pattern, and they were just as enthusiastic. They were really excited about it. I had a lady there who quilts the double knit quilts all the time, pieces the double knit quilts all the time, and she talked for an hour showing me how to quilt, you know, how she does it. So when I started, I said, now there's just not one way to piece quilts. There's lots of ways, and what works for you is fine. This is the way I do it, and I find that it works very well for beginners because it'll come out right. If you can take it and cut it out and sew it up and it matches, that's fine. You can save any of these steps, but for beginners, this works. So my friend was telling me just this morning on the phone that that lady was already wanting to borrow my pattern. She liked my way of doing it.
Great. Well, for the record, let's talk a little bit about double knit quilts. There's a little controversy about double knit quilts. Some people seem to wrinkle their nose at double knit quilts. I'd like to hear, could you describe what a double knit quilt is and tell us a little more about your understanding of this?
A double knit quilt is made out of those stretch double knit fabrics, but I don't know any better way to describe to you.
Polyester knits?
Polyester knits, uh-huh. They'll never wear out. They'll be around when the cotton ones are gone. They are indestructible unless it would be acid or something that dissolves that. They are beautiful colors. A lot of them are machine done, and I think they're beautiful quilts. I don't care for them because I prefer the other kind. I wouldn't mind owning one, I've really seen some beautiful, and they have really pretty colors in that, and they do beautiful things with them. They're heavy. I don't like them on the bed. I don't even like them for a throw.
I can imagine them pieced, but do they tie them or do they quilt them?
Some that I have seen are machine quilted. They are machine applique on, machine quilted, and they look beautiful. They're just great. I think they use some kind of a zigzag stitch, have a special machine that does it. And I don't think they put very much batting between them, but they're heavy enough without anything.
Is the batting also polyester knit?
Usually. It usually is. By the time you get two layers of that with all those seams in there with your piecing or whatever, it's plenty heavy. And they're beautiful. I just don't care to work with them. I don't have the polyesters. I gave all mine away.
Would a person who had pieced a polyester top and used a polyester back put them on the frame the way a cotton quilt is put on a frame to quilt?
That I don't know. I suppose if you
wanted to be stretched,
if you hand quilted them, I suppose that's the way you would do it. I haven't seen too many that were hand quilted. They have their place. They're unique. They're part of history. And maybe someday they'll be real valuable, real special, because they're part of this period of history.
Where do you get your quilt designs usually?
I am not an innovator or a designer. Most of mine I have copied. I did one kit quilt. I learned to applique, and it's a good learning experience. You learn the techniques, and they're pretty when you're happy with them when you get through, even though you didn't design them. If it's a patchwork, I don't know how anybody could be original. I don't know how you could design any that hadn't, you wouldn't find someplace. You might think it was, but later on you'd see it someplace. So, I have tried to be original in some applique quilts that I'm working on right now. I've tried to be more original in those. But I think we all get ideas from someplace or somebody else and then put them together, and they have original portion. Even if you're doing a traditional drunkard's path, there are hundreds of different ways to arrange it in color combinations and all, and that to me is creativity. But as far as drawing out our contemporary, I just don't have it. I know what I can do and what I can't. I can't do it.
Would you tell us about the quilt that's here in the foyer that you've got on the frame today?
Okay, I have worked with the browns, rust, and yellow and green tones quite a bit, and I wanted to try something different. So, I thought of the pansy, and that calls for purples and lavender shades, and I thought that would be interesting. I don't know that it'll ever fit in a bedroom that I have, but I thought it would be interesting colors to work with. So I worked one up, and I was also interested in quite a bit of design in the quilting, more like a white on white with just a little bit of color and applique on it. So the background is a chintz, a glazed cotton. I choose the thinnest quality that I can find that is not slazy, because the heavier drapery kinds are too hard to quilt through. And I like the little sheen to it, give it a different tone. And then I designed this one from scratch, just about copying a little here and a little there.
Pick what size?
This is roughly 87 by 100, something like that.
Did you launder everything that is going into this quilt as far as backing and top and batting? What did you launder?
I laundered every piece of the fabric that went into the top and the backing both. I did not. I used the polyester batting, but it's not the kind that you launder before you use it. Just the regular polyester batting.
A bonded batting?
It is bonded, but it's not that kind that's washable, that's cotton covered polyester or whatever that is.
Would you tell us a little bit about the thread that you prefer for piecing, appliquing, or quilting?
I use a quilting thread for piecing as well as quilting. It seems to me to be a little stronger, and it does not quite as bad.
Is it a cotton with a core of polyester in it, or is it 100% cotton, or
would you mind me getting a spool and
I think that's a good idea. I wish you would.
Extra strong. That one doesn't say. Quilting.
Get another spool that has a little more information on it.
All right.
I'm sure this doesn't say.
This says cotton, 100% cotton, lily quilting, and strong fort, extra strong quilting thread.
Okay.
So there isn't any polyester in it. I've seen some that I thought had a core of polyester.
I have too. I've used it, in fact.
What makes a good quilt?
Your quilt's only going to be as good as the fabric you put in it. So I'm particular to get good fabrics that will not fade or that are slazy. I don't want to put all that work on bad materials. Good fabric, good design, good color coordination, and good work.
Why do you make quilts?
It's just fun. I just enjoy it. There's a lot of hobbies that I enjoy. Crocheting, I would like toll, I would like just a lot of things.
Toll painting?
Toll painting.
Right.
I haven't done it, but I would like a cross stitch. I like any of those things.
Did you needlepoint?
I don't, no. I just, everything that I've tried, I prefer quilting.
When you first started as a child, did you think it was fun? You say now you think of quilting as fun. That's the reason you do it. Why did you do it when you first started?
I don't know. Probably because my mother was able to get us to do what we needed to do. We learned the discipline of work. That's something that children don't have the opportunity to learn now. And there's satisfaction in accomplishment. It's a great satisfaction. I think it'd be horrible to play all the time, not have anything constructive or worthwhile to do. And I'm afraid that it's difficult to get children to do that today. There's not, you don't have to get out on the farm and work. And they don't learn that discipline, which I think is sad. So that's part of it. I think maybe our childhood was too rigid and not enough fun. Most children on the farm, they worked hard and then they played. But ours was pretty rigid. We didn't have a lot of opportunities to play and to do other things.
Now you have two daughters. Well, we'll break for a moment while you answer the phone. Well, phone rang, I remember that I wanted to ask you in relation to the what children's lives were like back then. What were your children's lives like? Did you teach them to quilt the way your mother taught you to quilt?
I'm afraid not. They did sew some of sorts. I can remember Cheryl had a gym teacher. And
her husband?
No, Cheryl.
Cheryl had
a gym teacher.
Oh, a gym teacher. I thought you meant Jim, her husband.
No.
Excuse me.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Had a gym teacher in junior high, and that was at the stage that Cheryl was, you know how the junior high stage is. And this is a teacher that I had in first and second grade, and she was taking She was taking sewing too, and this gym teacher, because she had known me when I was a kid, was interested in Cheryl. And Cheryl was so slap happy at that time that she couldn't keep a pattern together, and she didn't care what she did, you know. So I remember the teacher saying, and Cheryl wore nice clothes that I had made her. She wore those to school, and I remember the teacher saying, I know your mother would be happy if you could learn to sew or something like that, you know. But Cheryl has made a nice little wall quilt that she designed herself. It's a clamshell. The color coordination is just great. She has to do a thesis on everything, so I know the Edie Pig up at the Lexington quilt shop is where she got the fabric. I know she thought, my goodness, I'll starve to death if this is the way. It took her all afternoon to select all these fabrics, and then I started picking some up. She said, here's a true quilter. I just picked some. Give me half a yard of this, half a yard of this. And sure, I was just laboring over it, but it turned out real well. She quilted it real nice herself.
How recently?
About 3 years, 3 or 4 years ago. It's a real nice little piece, and she's proud of it because she did it. I've shown it in a few shows.
Do you think she'll do any more quilting?
Not at this time. With two rowdy boys, that's the farthest thing from her mind. And Iris keeps saying, Mother, we've got to learn to quilt before the art is lost. We've got to learn from you. But they can't concentrate. You've got to have time to concentrate on this. And she brings work home with her. She's always behind. There's just no time for it.
Iris does.
Iris, mm-hmm.
Where does she work?
She has her own business. It's a handwriting analysis. And she just loves it and has a great time. Gets to travel and do a lot of things. And it's just right for her. But there's no time for quilting.
Maybe that'll come later.
That'll probably come later.
Which do you prefer, piecing, appliquing, or quilting, or what do you really prefer to be doing when it comes to quilts?
I like it all. I'm kind of hung up on a little bit of trapunto or stuffed work right now, and applique, because I've done the piecing. And I like to quilt. It's easy to sit down and do a few quilting stitches, put in a few stitches, and jump up and do something else. Where if you're piecing, you have to have more time to get your stuff all spread out and stuff like that. I don't know which I prefer.
Have you been to any quilting bees or quilting parties or? What's the difference between a quilting bee and a quilting party?
I don't know the difference. Mother, that late in her life, didn't have any quilting bees. She probably did earlier, but she was kind of past it by the time I came along, and we just quilted there alone. I'm sure she had been involved in some. And then I have quilted in groups, in the club, and like I've already described and stuff like that. But I don't know the difference in quilting clothes and quilting bees. Quilting
parties.
Parties and quilting bees.
And you do belong to quilting clubs.
Yes, I do.
Would you tell us what quilting clubs you belong to and how they were started, a little bit about them?
The local club is the Louisville Nimble Thimbles, which I was in on the very inception of that, from the very first.
Did you hold an office in that club?
Yes, I did. I was vice president and then president when my husband got sick. And then I had to resign and somebody else take over. I lost him the 30th of June. It hasn't been quite a year yet. And so my vice president had to take over for that. So I've been rather inactive for a year or two then. Then the other is the...
Well, as far as the Louisville Nimble Thimbles, when did they start? How recent was that? Was it the bicentennial?
Yes. Uh-huh. What year was that?
76. Could it have been? Yeah, 76.
That far back?
Uh-huh.
They started right after that, or during that time?
During that time, right. Mm-hmm. That was our first project, the Bicentennial Quilt, and it was great. It was really a fun project.
Well, before we go on to another club, tell me a little about the Bicentennial Quilt that you're referring to.
Well, Katie Christofferson is the one that got all of this going. I would sit and quilt alone. I hadn't been in this vicinity long enough to know other quilters. And I was thinking, I wish I knew other quilters. And I saw this article in the paper by Katie, and I called her. She said, well, go to this Highland Presbyterian Church on Grinstead Drive and meet with them at a certain night. So she must have told everybody that, so we bombarded that little group. And out of that grew our balloon quilt, which was really fantastic in design and a doozy to work up, but it was fun and it really knit us together, and we just feel so close to each other and enjoy each other and the same kind of people, you know.
Tell me a little bit about what you call a balloon quilt.
Well, before the Derby, there is a balloon race in Louisville. That's a historical thing. And to see all of those balloons in the sky is a rainbow of color, and it is just fantastic. That is held, as I said, before the Derby each year. Somebody conceived the idea of a balloon quilt. I believe it was Pat Sturzel. And then Nancy Stiller and others, Nancy Raglan Stiller and others, helped design that quilt. And they did such a fantastic job. They had photos of it or pictures of it, and sometimes they would magnify it on the screen to the size that they wanted it and trace it off. That'd be one way they'd do it. So they really did a good job in the design of it. And then I remember thinking, along with several other people who grumbled and grumbled, they might be good designers, but they don't know anything about quilting and fabric. How are you going to put fabric together in that way? Well, they were patient with us, and we struggled and struggled. We embroidered and we cut and we redid. I remember doing the Kentucky State Fair, went over about 3 times.
This is a balloon with the Kentucky State Fair on it.
A balloon with the Kentucky State Fair on it. It's a beautiful balloon. And then the Porter paint balloon, and all of those have such vivid, beautiful colors on them. So I made several of those, and we applique them on, and we got in Nancy Raglan Stiller's second floor of her studio, where she had a big room, and we put that thing in a great big frame where everybody could quilt it out. We got it done, and it has been entered in I don't know how many contests. And it really has the depth. It looks like you're just seeing all these balloons in the air at a distance. It is really a good design.
Other than the Kentucky State Fair balloon, do you remember the name of any other balloons that you actually were responsible for or worked on?
I made the Porter paint balloon, and if I had a picture of it, I could tell you. I made 4 or 5 of them.
Did you?
I can't remember right now.
What period of time was the balloon quilt in process? From beginning to end, you suppose?
Roughly a year.
Where is the balloon quilt today?
It is belongs to Porter Paint, and I don't know where it is stored particularly, but Porter Paint bought it from us, and we are allowed to show it or enter it in any kind of contests or anything that we want to for a period of time. I'm not sure where it's going to be eventually.
Did I recall that they took one of the balloons off and made a Porter Paint balloon a little larger or more important because
yes.
They were the ones that were going to be displaying it?
Yes. There was one balloon that wasn't around anymore, had quit or something. And Porter Paint has a balloon. They have 2 balloons. They have one that'll fly, and they have one that is a paint can. Their Porter Paint can is shaped just like the can. Their Porter Paint can, shaped just like that. I don't think it flies very well, But I made that, and they put it on in the place of one of the others that had been.
Oh, you made the one that shaped like a can.
I made the one like a can, right.
Tell me about the Louisville Thimble, the Louisville Nimble Thimbles quilt, that or balloon that was on the quilt.
That is a real intricate design and hard to piece. And for the basket underneath, it has a thimble. And it has embroidered on it Louisville Nimble Thimbles in French knots. And it's really a fantastic design. I don't know how to describe it other than that. It's really pretty.
As far as the Louisville Nimble Thimbles Club, can you give us some idea of the size of the organization? How large it was when you were first a part of it, and how large it might be today? Do you have any idea?
Well, there were only 15 or 20 of us to start with, and it has grown to the last count around 80 or 90, I think. Of course, members come and go. They move in and move out, but that was the last count that I had about that many.
I interrupted you as far as telling us about other quilt clubs you may belong to. Perhaps you would like tell us about a different club other than the Louisville Nimble Thimbles.
Well, I belong to the Kentucky Heritage Quilt Society, which is a statewide organization. And they are into several projects. They're into documentation and historical aspect of it. And they have sort of subgroups in different parts of the state, of workers in all the different parts of the state. And they do group projects, too. They have made a quilt that they're raffling off to raise money, and quite a few other things like that.
Are they a more recent organization?
They're a little bit nearer than the Nimble Thimbles, yes. A little bit more recent than that. I was a charter member of that, but I can't give you the dates on it.
Can you give me an idea of the size of the membership?
No, I don't know the size of the membership of that.
And is there... Number two, I'm continuing an interview that has been going on this morning in her home. It's March 30th, 1983, and my name is Joy Peterson. We were discussing on the end of the first tape the National Quilters Association. All right, Evelyn, we had talked about Louisville Nimble Thimbles as a city organization, and then we talked about the Kentucky Heritage Quilt Society, a state organization. Now, would you tell us what the NQA is?
That is a national organization, and they have a fabulous quilt show and contest every year, and it's held in different parts of the country. And the Louisville Nimble Thimbles is a chapter of that. The whole club belongs to that, and we're a chapter of that. So we hope eventually to sponsor them here and have a quilt show here in a year or two. I believe it was held in New Orleans last year, and the year before it was Madison, I believe. I'm not sure about that. I'd like to raise that.
I've heard that there's such a thing as a Kentucky quilt. What do you think they're talking about?
I sure don't know. After seeing the older quilts that we have, I think they're of a quality that's just about like they are anyplace else. I don't know of the difference myself. No need for me to try to comment. I just don't know.
Do you have any quilt books?
Every one that's on the market, practically.
What would you say offhand is your favorite one?
Well, it depends on what phase I'm in right now. I liked Michael James when I took his workshop and was into that. now Jenny Byers, in the medallion quilts. I'm into that right now. And if I'm teaching, there's a couple of simple ones by Marjorie Puckett, and that I like real well. Another by Diane Leon for instructions for my students for simple step by step instructions. Those are some of my favorites.
What about magazines? Quilt magazines.
Well, the first one I subscribed to was Quilter's Newsletter, and I really ate it up. Then I've run across several others, and I subscribe to all of them that I can find.
Can you name some of the others?
Quilt World.
Lady Circle Patchwork,
uh-huh.
The other day I heard of one called Back Home in Kentucky, or the Backwoods of Kentucky, something like that. Have you heard of that one?
No.
Uh-huh. I hadn't either. And I still am not certain of the name of it. Katie Christopherson's writing an article for it.
That is a Kentucky, Back Home in Kentucky is a magazine. I did subscribe to that one year. It is a magazine about everything in Kentucky, and she has had articles in it, very interesting articles in it. And I had a year subscription, and evidently I've let it run out. I'm not getting it now, and I got to subscribe again.
Why do you prefer one of your Quilter's magazines over another? Or do you?
Well, that's just similar to the quilt books, whatever I'm interested in at the time, whatever is I'm looking for at the time.
Do you take patterns from them?
No, I haven't taken any patterns from them. Do you mean...
From your magazines?
Oh, yes, I take patterns from magazines. I thought you meant, do I buy patterns from them, but I haven't. No.
Mm-hmm. But you do take patterns that are in a magazine.
Patterns that are in the magazines, and the pictures or whatever.
Do you follow those patterns exactly?
I sure don't.
Well, your strawberry patch pattern for your quilters, they're coming to your home. Does that come out of a magazine, did you say?
Yes, that was out of a magazine I just happened to pick up.
You didn't follow it exactly?
No.
Right. Mm-hmm. What do you do with your finished quilts?
Well, I've made one for my granddaughter, one for my daughter. The other daughter has, I made two for, about two a piece for them. Cheryl has two hanging, one in her living room wall and one on her family room wall. And her mother-in-law also gives her quilts, so she's lucky there. She's got lots of quilts from all around. And I've never sold one. I did have one that I put a price on it once, and I was glad it didn't sell.
Have you ever quilted for other people?
No. Can't afford to.
What do you mean you can't afford to?
You can't afford to charge the time that it takes to do it. By the time I put all that work in it, I have such a sentimental attachment to it, I can't give them up. One of the reasons I prefer making quilts is because you have an heirloom when you get through. And with a lot of the other hobbies, they're going to be gone and nobody's going to care that much about them. But I feel like they are an heirloom, and I feel like that I'm doing something that I can pass on to the next generations. It's one of my reasons for preferring quilts. I love needlepoint and cross-stitch and everything, and I don't want, maybe there'll be heirlooms too, but I guess I just appreciate quilts more.
Well, what do you do with old quilts when they begin to wear out?
Well, I throw them back on a shelf a while and patch them a while. I've got one that I'm thinking about making some clothing out of. It's so badly worn that it's not of any use. I have one from my great-great-grandmother that is worth, it's too badly deteriorated, but it is such an exquisite piece of work that I just hold on to it and get it out and look at it once in a while. What happened with that quilt is it's a pomegranate, and it is appliqué exquisitely done. My great-great-grandmother made it, and it must have been a great big quilt because my grandmother and her sister took this quilt, ripped it in two in the middle, and made two quilts out of it by putting a new border on each one. Then each one of them had a quilt. But the new border that they put on, which is just as good workmanship and everything, it faded when the older one did not fade. So it sort of ruined it, and I've always wondered what happened to the other.
Well, is it twin bed size now?
No, it's full bed size.
And that's a pomegranate quilt.
That's
and this is your great-great-grandmother.
Yes, that was my great-great-grandmother made it. And my grandmother and her sister took it, thought they'd make two quilts out of it. It was such an exquisite quilt, I guess. They didn't want to divide it up. You know, didn't want one to have it and not the other. So this is exquisite work on it, all of this, but this material doesn't, it faded out more than, the other is deteriorated.
Well, we're seeing here a green swag that's been appliqued on around three sides of the quilt, and then the other side of the quilt has the same swag, only it appears to be tan. Are you saying that you think that this tan used to be green?
Oh, yes.
You're sure it did?
Oh,
uh-huh.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
You can tell by the thread that it was a darker color,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm. And that's the newer part that faded.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I want to get a picture of that to document it before I go. That's beautiful. Now, was this the Elliott family?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's your great-great-grandmother that made it.
Right.
What do you suppose the date is?
All I could give you was the dates of my grandmother and my great-great-grandmother. I could
Good.
Give you their
Let's
birth-
put those dates on
I
the
give
tape.
You their birth dates.
Great. While you're looking that up, I'm going to tell a little bit about this quilt for the tape. The quilting is about maybe a half an inch apart in a grid. Exquisite, tiny, tiny stitches all over. And the pomegranate blossoms are in red and pink with orange centers. And the greenery around them comes up in a horseshoe curve from one bud to another with a blossom in the middle. Leaves are appliqued onto this horseshoe curve, and the whole motif ends in a small green base that's appliqued on. All appliqued onto a white background.
You ready for this
interview? Oh, sure.
My grandmother was Mary Frances Nichols before she married my grandfather, who was Daniel Elliott. Her birth dates are the 18th of February, 1857. And she died in November 1934, which would make this last edition sometime between those dates of 57 and 34. Now, my great-grandmother...
So you're saying that your grandmother's the one that put this tan part on, this
uh-huh.
part after it was split.
Yeah.
So the quilt predates that, but this part on this edge that's been faded is within that period.
Mm-hmm. That the part that's faded is within that period.
Right.
My great-grandmother was Sarah Marie Castleman.
And can you spell that last name?
C-A-S-T-L-E-M-A-N, Castleman. Her birth date was September of 1828, and her death was 1916. She lived to be quite old and had six children. But so it would have to be, the quilt was made sometime between that period.
Mm-hmm. And she had at least two daughters, and they split this quilt in half.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I've often wondered what happened to the other half of it.
You don't really know?
I don't know. I'm sure this would have had to been done back sometime in the 1800s. She was married in 1849. So it wasn't done late in her life. It's too good work. And she lived to be up around 90 or so. The work is too good for it to have been done in her 90s.
I'd like to hear what you think is in there as far as batting is concerned in those, some of those torn places.
This has seed in it. It has seed in it, so it was what they had made themselves, I'm sure.
You mean they had carded the cotton themselves?
Uh-huh.
Is carding the word that you use?
I think so.
Uh-huh. And the fact that you see seed when you hold it up to the light the way you did just now means that it was probably home carded cotton.
Right.
And they would just card and card it, as I understand it. Well, you tell me, how did they do this?
That's all I know, as much as you do. I've never seen them do it. I've just heard them talk about it. But that's what they did, is just card all that and get as many seed out as they could and get it in some kind of a workable order. I just don't know.
Beautiful. Mm. I want to be sure and get a picture of that. Well, while we're talking about quilts that you've got that are older, I've taken a picture here of this Drunkard Path. Would you describe it and tell us a little bit about it for our tape recorder here?
It's navy and white, and again, I don't know anything about the dates of that. I would assume it was around the turn of the century, late 1800s up to 1900s, according to by the date of my grandparents. It is set in the traditional Drunkard's Path pattern. Zigzaggedy, diagonal, just the traditional Drunkard Path pattern.
And who made it?
My grandmother.
Grandmother Elliot?
Grandmother Elliot made that. But there's no dates or nothing and anything on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's quilted in a...
It's your mother's mother?
My mother's mother.
And did she live in Nelson County?
No, she lived in LaRue County.
Oh, LaRue County, right.
We had LaRues in the family, but what LaRue County was named after.
Oh, really?
LaRue's and their family. John Jacob LaRue was the one that came and settled in LaRue County.
When, do you suppose?
You want to hold while I get
some
dates?
Sure.
See if I can get some dates, how much dates I can get on John Jacob LaRue.
We'll want to measure the size of this quilt, too, so we can document it. That navy blue is certainly a stable dye, isn't it? It's beautiful. It doesn't appear to have faded at all.
Very good, I think, for as old as it is. The oldest LaRue information that we have came here in 1688 and settled Virginia and Kentucky. These LaRues did.
1688?
Uh-huh. 1783, that was Peter LaRue. And there's the ones that came down and settled it.
And Grandmother Elliot was from the LaRue family.
Yes, she was. She was
a LaRue before her wedding, you think? Or
She was a Nichols.
She was a Nichols.
And her mother was a Castleman.
Castleman, and then
and
perhaps.
Her mother was a LaRue.
Her mother was a LaRue.
LaRue.
I see. Uh-huh. Well, I'm glad to have that straight.
this Jacob LaRue, his birth date was 1744, but that's two or three generations down from the Peter LaRue that came and settled Virginia and Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. But Jacob LaRue was great-grandmother Kesselman's father.
Right.
This quilt that we're talking about, the Drunkard's Path, that's navy blue on white, would you tell us a little about the quilting motif in it?
It's a clamshell, a tiny clamshell.
By tiny, you want to give us an estimate of what your eye tells you? It's a
3/4 of an inch in the largest part.
You don't know the overall dimensions of it?
No, I don't.
We will measure that and put it down on the documentation form. Has it ever been in any shows?
No, it hasn't.
And you have owned it. There haven't been other owners other than just your family.
No,
right.
Our family.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, it hasn't been used that much.
Right.
Mother just kept it folded away.
And it's cotton.
It's all cotton.
And presumably it is, has a backing and a batting that are cotton.
Right.
And the binding also,
mm-hmm.
which has rounded corners and appears to be a bias binding that's been doubled,
mm-hmm.
wouldn't you say?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think so.
Yeah. Well, it occurred to me while we're talking about the Drunkard's Path, I didn't ask you what quilts that you have made have been entered in contests or shows.
I've never entered a quilt in a contest. I've had several in shows. And wall quilts and things like that I've had in shows.
In a state fair?
I haven't entered anything in a state fair.
Just in a store like American Accents?
Right,
Well, I've seen one of your quilts, Dove in the Window. I wish you would tell us a little bit about that quilt.
Okay, it is, the Dove in the Window is pieced, and then it's pieced around it to look like there's one square that sits on, lays on another square, and it alternates from red to brown. It looks in one like, it's pieced with a red square, and it looks like it's laying on a brown square. And the next one will be a brown square, looks like it's laying on a red square. And it has a wide brown border. It's made with one of the Dove in the Windows in the corner that hangs down.
At the foot of the bed.
At the foot of the bed.
On the drop.
Yeah.
There is one of these blocks that's incorporated into
the,
drop.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the part that goes over the pillow is a kind of a triangle shape with the design that goes up over the pillow, and the rest of that is brown.
Is it all 100% cotton, or is it
yes.
polyester fabric?
It's all cotton.
And you used polyester batting?
Yes.
When did you make it?
I got the date on it. It would be 80 or 81. I'd have to look at it and see.
Uh-huh. And where did you get the pattern?
I got it out of Quilter's Newsletter. Pattern for that.
Do you use it? Is it a quilt that you are using on your
it's
own
on
bed?
It's on a bed now. I plan to enter that in a contest sometime, or the fair or something. And this one I'm working on now, I hope to enter that in a contest sometime.
In your opinion, has there been any change in people's attitude about quilting?
Oh, yes. There has really been a revival in it and an enthusiasm for it in recent years, which just young people get into it and how innovative they are and creative they are. It's really exciting to see them do it. It used to be so old-fashioned and, you know, only only grandmothers that got around on crutches with filled with quilts. But it's the in thing now.
When you say innovative and creative, what quilts come to your mind? Do you have any you could tell us about that strike your fancy?
Well, the balloon quilt is a great example. And the one they have in progress now, which they want to enter into a contest.
Who's they?
The Louisville Nimble Thimbles.
And what is this that they are have in progress now?
They want to enter it into the Indianapolis Quilt Show. They got the pattern from the Indianapolis Star. They run patterns all year, and you can take in conjunction with a department store in Indianapolis, I believe. Don't know the name of the store.
Is it Block?
Sounds like it.
I don't know.
In conjunction.
But the name of the newspaper is the Indianapolis Star.
Okay.
They
run these patterns all year. Last year was stars, all different kinds of star patterns. So they have, I say that the group has, because I had little to do with the design. I had only to cut out some patterns. I had nothing to do with the design. I helped with the patterns and some of the piecing. But they have taken all of these patterns and placed them on, going to place them on a background that looks like the sky, which has been tie-dyed. The background for the quilt has been tie-dyed in the blues and blues, grays, and purplish. And this is arranged in such a fashion that it comes around like a cyclone, like a center in the middle and all the way around, the cyclone-like effect, with the stars in the middle beginning very small and going on out and larger on the outside edge. And quilted in the same fashion to emphasize the design. They call it Infinity, which I think is a very appropriate name.
How many stars are there?
I don't know.
I had heard 30, but I don't know.
They would have to be close to 30 if they run one a week.
And each star is different?
Yes, each star is different. They're all shades of yellow. The stars are all shades of yellow. And very intricate, some of them.
And when will this contest be held?
I don't know. I don't know the dates of that. May or June?
Why do you think there's been such a change in attitudes toward quilting?
Seems like people are more interested in folklore, in the arts and crafts, and like antique furniture and stuff. It's a reminiscence. It's a back to the safe days of childhood when you didn't know there was a problem. It's kind of an escape from the troubles that's in the world and the loads we have on our shoulders. Kind of an escape and a nice one, I think.
Mm-hmm. What's the value of quilting?
I don't know how you put a value on it. It's your creation. And how is anybody going to pay you for your creation? You know, what's part of you. You put a part of you, yourself, into every quilt. And I suppose there are quite a few people who have a lot of time and they aren't doing anything anyway. They like to quilt, so they can't charge minimum wage. But it is some help to retired people on Social Security and a pleasure while they're doing it.
What makes a good quilt stitch?
Good quilt stitch? An even one. It doesn't necessarily have to be, as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't necessarily have to be so many stitches to the inch as much as it is uniform. I have seen some real pretty quilting that was not the tiniest stitches in the world that I thought was as pretty as some of the tinier stitches.
If you ever embroider on your quilts, do you use cross stitch, crewel, or another type?
Well, there's cross stitch quilts that are all cross stitch. I haven't done one. But there are other types of embroidery with your applique to finish out a design and embellish, affix the center or whatever. So it depends on what you're doing again.
Do you sign your quilts?
I most certainly do. I didn't begin signing them, but I do now.
How do you sign them?
ENV, my initial, and sometimes I will put my whole name with the date. If I think enough of it, I'll put my whole name so they won't.
What's your middle name?
Naoma.
N-A-O-M-I.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you sign them?
Because I'm proud of them and I want them to know who made them. Them being whoever follows them. I think back in generations past, they didn't, these fine quilts that I'll never make one like, I think they didn't realize that someday somebody was going to want to know who made that quilt. Maybe they didn't think they'd be around that long. Maybe just the next generation knew who made them, so why bother, you know? Then another thing I think, too, women in pioneer days were an entity. They weren't even a number, they had no identity, and had no skills, apparently, no recognition. They had plenty of skills, they just weren't recognized for their skills. And they didn't even feel that important in what they did themselves, to say nothing about anybody else feeling important about it. I'm anxious to see that changed. I have another quilt out here that's very interesting, the one that's hanging on the other wall.
Well, let's talk about it.
Okay.
A little bit about it. Tell me the design.
It's turkey tracks. It's called turkey tracks. That was also made by my grandmother.
And
Grandmother Elliot.
Okay.
I never knew my other grandmother, either one of my other grandparents. They were all gone way before my time. I was at a quilt show in Hodgenville, LaRue County, just this last summer. A cousin called me about it and said, "You must come to see this." So I ran out on Sunday afternoon. She said, "Our relatives have some quilts in the show." And sure enough, there hung on the wall was a quilt of a distant cousin that was practically the same design as this one on my wall here.
This is side two of the second tape of an interview that I am doing, Joy Peterson is doing, in Evelyn Vitato's home in Louisville, Kentucky, in Jefferson County. I guess it's not Louisville, Kentucky, it's Anchorage, right?
Louisville, I usually.
Do you? And we have been talking about a quilt that Evelyn's grandmother, Elliot, made, and we're going to continue with a discussion of it. All right.
As I was saying, I was in a quilt show in Hodgenville, and this distant cousin had entered a quilt in that show. And it is almost the same as this turkey tracks, a little bit of difference in it, and she called that one the tulip pattern.
The one that you saw in the Hodgenville show that you think your grandmother's sister made with her.
Right.
Tulip pattern?
Tulip, uh-huh.
And you call yours
Turkey tracks.
Turkey tracks. Mm-hmm. I've always heard it called turkey tracks. It's the traditional turkey tracks.
Uh-huh. There's a little bit of difference in this one and that one. In the center here, there's some difference.
Oh, why don't you describe that for the tape?
Okay. Okay, this one that's called a tulip pattern made by my grandmother's sister has a little, has a circle around the center of green, where mine, the one that I have, does not have that circle part there.
Mm-hmm.
It just has the points pointing toward the turkey tracks.
Right. Yours has that yellow part. Would you call it yellow, or what color would you call
yellow,
that?
Yellow gold.
The yellow gold part. And they, in this one in Hodgesville, the one that's called Tulip, it has green circling that, but it's not exactly a circle. How would you say that?
This whole thing is...
It's kind of a melon shape. Yeah, it becomes a circle by the addition of this green melon shape, whereas yours does not have those green melons on all four sides, and so it is, what would you call it, that center gold, yellow gold design.
I don't know what that's
called. I don't know what you would call that. Kind of a pillow shape. It's a square that's been pushed in on all four sides.
The corners are sharp points.
Yeah. And then you want to tell them more about the color of the...
The fabrics seem to be the same that's in the quilt that I have. Now, I haven't got to talk to her. I took some pictures of that, and I want to get with her and compare notes and see if we can come up with something. But I can just picture them making these quilts at the same time because they have the same fabric in them, and they are practically the same design. So that was real interesting to me. I just haven't been able to follow up on it yet.
Now this has got other colors than the gold and the green that we talked about. Do you want to tell about that?
It has red as the center of the turkey track, and it's on a white background.
And it has green at either side of the
red
center in the turkey track, or in the tulip that they call it.
Mm-hmm.
I think traditionally we would find that in books called a turkey track quilt or pattern. Right. Do you know the size of her quilt? Is it the same size as yours?
No, I don't know the size of it.
Is either of these quilts signed?
No. Mine is not.
Mm-hmm. It's cotton material and cotton backing and cotton batting, as far as you can tell.
Yes. They are so thin, I don't think they have very much in them. I think that's another reason they could get so many stitches to the inch. There was practically nothing between them. Of course, this one has a batting in it, and it is still fine quality work.
Certainly is. You're talking about the pomegranate one that
right.
we have here on the floor
mm-hmm.
in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
It is fine work. What other quilts do you have here in the house that you might want to tell us about?
Well, I have one that's might be a variation and something a little bit different to the traditional quilt. That is of interest to me. This one hangs on my grandson Brian's room. He's still small enough. Pretty soon he'll outgrow it. But the story behind this one is that a very dear friend sent me a birthday card, and knowing the quilt lover that I am, it had a scene on it that looked just like a quilt. So I just had to make it. I wanted to fool with the padding a little bit. And stuffed work. So, not being an artist, I struggled and struggled. Finally came up with a pattern. And the way I started constructing that was to start at the top. I didn't start with this sky part, which is an organza, silk organza or something like that. I didn't want to handle that much. Well, maybe I better describe the whole thing before I start how I did it. It is, at the very bottom, is flowers and butterflies, oversized. Then there's a little fence around it. And then there's all of these different hills with little houses nestled in behind the hills. And there's trees on it. And then there's the sky that with clouds and all. I call it, be it ever so humble, because it represents my childhood home in the country, on the farm. And our home was certainly humble. I started to talk about how I constructed this. I started at the top, but I didn't start with the cloud part because I didn't want to handle that silk organza that much. I started with the hills. The hills are represented in all different shades of green, some patterned and some plain, and all different shades. And for each hill, I would sew the top part of the hill, then I'd stuff some bedding in it, and then attach the next layer of hills down below that, and stick a house in here or there. The houses are bright orange and brown and blues, nestled among all of this green with trees behind them. And the stem of the trees, the tree trunks were made out of a striped brown fabric. And they have apples on them. And the roof is a pattern that has a little dot in it. It has chimneys sticking out of it. I put a few pine trees on the top of the mountain. I cut those out of felt and attached them. There's a path that leads out to the edge. There's a little fence. The daisies and flowers are oversized compared to the house, exaggerated, and butterflies. And they're just all shades of rose, pink, blue. A little reverse applique, embroidered centers in the middle. Purple tulips. And then I just quilted around all of that and gave it a extra dimension. So I just made that. It's a fun thing. It's different to anything, the traditional quilt. So my youngest grandson is still small enough that he can tolerate this in his room a few more years.
What's his name?
His name is Brian.
When was he born?
Well, he's seven. The other one is 8 and a half.
What's the overall size?
About 36 by 40. Maybe a little bigger. It's put on a white, looks like it's on a white polished cotton. It is on a white polished cotton, but it looks like it's laid on there and quilted around the outside edges.
Did you sign it?
I don't think I have signed that one. That reminds me, I'm going to do it.
When did you make it?
About 4 years ago.
Do you have any other quilts you want to tell us about?
I have made another wall quilt for my other daughter. It is called it's called a fruit basket. It's a wall quilt or a table quilt, laid on the table or something like that. It is in the rust and oranges and greens. And it's four fruit baskets that the bottoms face each other. It has fruit applique in them, and then it's set with around it with squares, about 2 inches, 2-inch squares of all colors around these four baskets, and it makes a square. Oh, it's real pretty too. It's real pretty.
Your daughter has it.
She has that. I've made my granddaughter a maple leaf quilt, and I've made Iris, my oldest daughter, a double wedding ring, and like I say, Cheryl has a lone star in her living room. I had made this lone star, and I wasn't real happy with the colors. I tried to get the colors that Mountain Mist suggested for this lone star, and I didn't think it turned out very well at all. I thought I didn't select the right colors, and it laid around. So one day, Cheryl had redone her living room, and one day she looked at that quilt, and she said, "Mother, that ought to go someplace." She took it home, and it matched her living room perfectly. If I'd have selected the colors, I wouldn't have done as well. And all of her friends just drew an eye over her quilts.
When did you make it?
I don't know. That was, I don't even remember when I made it. I don't even know if it's signed or dated. I don't know how long, how old that one is.
How many quilts do you think you've made?
I have 15 or 20 that in recent years, and I don't know how many way back, because like I say, we both worked on them, and I don't even know where they are. I made one for my sister's son that is worn out, and besides all that we have at home.
Yeah, you want to tell the tape recorder about this quilt?
That's one of my earlier ones. I thought that would be a good example of the beginning work. It's just one of those things that I probably saw a pattern in a magazine or paper or someplace and cut it out and took whatever scraps they were around and made it. I don't know the name of it. And it has no date or anything on it. It's one of those that's just what came out, because that's what the scraps were. We didn't go buy fabric for quilts then. We just...
Well, about when was this?
It would have had to been in the 30s sometime. It has my dresses in it from school and stuff like that. That's the last quilt my mother made.
Now tell us, this is another quilt that we're talking about. Tell us about this quilt.
This is a tie quilt. That was my mother's favorite kind to make.
You don't mean like it's tied rather than quilted.
No,
you mean the pattern.
The pattern is a tie pattern.
Did you call it a bow tie?
Yeah, it's a bow tie.
Mm-hmm.
My mother lived with me several years before she passed away, and her health wouldn't allow her to be very active, so I persuaded her to piece me one more quilt. That's what she liked to piece, so I quilted that after she was gone. It has some of all of our dresses, my children's dresses and her dresses and different things.
Now, is it signed?
No, it isn't. I could come up with a fairly good date on that. It would take a little while. That's the kind that we didn't value all that much, because a lot of them were just put on the bed and worn out. I just hang on to that one.
Well, about what date? Because you know when she passed on them. No?
Well, I'd have to look up some
right
dates or something.
I noticed a quilt back there in the hallway.
That is a star quilt. I'm not sure what kind of star that is, but one of my childhood friends from the country, their mother, gave them all a quilt. So when I got married, they gave me a quilt top, and I thought that made it kind of special, because I was in their home so much. I guess they considered me a daughter too. So I've quilted it. They gave me the top, and I quilted it. This is a brown necktie that I've made recently.
I don't know if it's dated or not. No, it would be in the corner if it was. It's been made since I've been here, so it's probably in.
When did you move into this house?
Seventy-five, I believe. So it would be between that and 80, someplace in there. That's some fabric I had and just worked it up. I wanted it for the bed in the back bedroom, but I didn't like it that well after I got it down there. That's another one of those big patterns, and I don't know the name of that. And it's the same story as with the other one. It has, I think, an old blanket or something in it as opposed to bedding. It feels like it has.
Who made it?
I made it. And it's a big pattern. Went fast. Not much quilting on it. And made out of scraps anyway they happened to come together, and whatever you had left, that's what you did with them.
Tell us some of the colors.
Turquoise, a dark blue, rust, yellows and browns, set together with a white, and some pattern, some patterns. This is an older tie, necktie, still another one that my mother made. The fabrics in this, as you can tell, are all older.
Like how old?
I don't know. It would be
20s?
Yeah. This doesn't have any of our clothes in it or anything, so it was back in another. It might have.
Work shirts.
That sort of thing.
That may not have been picked up.
The work shirts?
Yeah, work shirts.
Mother was very utilitarian, practical. She didn't do anything fancy. We made quilts to keep us warm, and in that cold house, it took plenty of them. So, the fastest way, we quilted diagonally a lot, and she wasn't interested in fancy designs and stuff like that. It's someplace back in the 30s. I'm sure that I worked on this one some, but I've worked on so many I don't really remember. We're back to the star quilt that was given to me as a gift when I married. It was a gift from my girlfriend's mother, the top. And it has real pretty fabrics in it. It is bright and has yellows and greens and lavenders, blues, set together with white. And
you quilted it?
I quilted this. I quilted this when I was still on the farm before we moved to Louisville.
What was her name?
Her name that gave it, the one that gave it to me, was Ossie Troutman, T-R-O-U-T-M-A-N. Her daughter Vivian was one of my childhood friends.
Well, this has been a beautiful bunch of quilts, and I know that in the other room you have some quilts on some beds. Tell me about some of those while we're in here taping.
There's one more that is, I think, real important. You want to hold till I go get it? Let me go get another one off of the bed.
All right. We'll just hold while you go get one. I'll fold some of these up while you're gone.
Oh, my. Now, what's this pattern?
Well, it's a 3, 6,
is it nine patch? Who made it?
This is another one for my grandmother.
Grandmother Elliot.
My grandmother Elliot made this. And this is made, this is a lot of blacks, even solid blacks, polka dot blacks, pin dot blacks, black and gray stripes, black and white stripes, black and white prints, black and white flowers. And it is the kind of dresses that I remember my grandmother wearing. They wore those dark gray and black dresses almost down to their ankles with a white apron over them with a big pocket on them. And this white apron would have all kinds of fancy cross stitch and stuff on it. And they were real dignified looking. This is particularly interesting to me, the way the blocks are set together. It's, I guess, a 9 patch. Set diagonally. I don't know a way to describe the way that's set. It's not 9 patches in a square. They're half squares that of a darker blue.
This center of the 9 patch is on point,
mm-hmm.
which makes the patches that adjoin it on point. And all, they become 3 vertically and 3 horizontally, all on point. That's interesting.
Uh-huh. Makes a very interesting pattern. It's just, you know, it's just squares, but they're set together
mm-hmm.
on the
point. What size squares would you say?
2 inches, 2-inch squares.
Mm-hmm. And then the block becomes about maybe 12-inch?
Yeah, probably a 12-inch square.
Mm-hmm. The sashing is about 4, 3?
I'd say 4 inches.
Now, we've talked about the black, but we haven't talked about the sashing.
With all of this black and gray, it is set together with a dark blue. Not a navy, but it's a deep, dark blue. The blue around the 9 patch that is filled in around the edges of the 9 patch is a deeper blue than the sashing that it's set together with. Makes a very striking quilt. And the colors are, this black with this dark blue are really striking. I would never think of combining colors like that. The quilting is diagonal. And there'll be 3 rows of quilting together, and then they'll skip about 2 rows, and then 3 more rows close together, which makes an interesting quilt pattern. The squares themselves are quilted straight across, because the 9 patch, when it's set straight this way, patch is biased, so it's prettier to quilt it straight across. Then the sashing is quilted diagonally, which makes it puff up real pretty. So they had quite a bit of talent in color combinations and things like that. With their scraps, no less.
And the binding is the same blue as the sashing.
Mm-hmm.
There's one square up there that looks quite a bit different.
I've really wondered about that.
Do you think it could be the dye lot and that they faded, or do you think she just put in one that was a grayish brown where all the rest are blacks?
I don't know. Since I've seen so many quilts that had one block that was off or something, maybe it was deliberate. You'll notice also at the top of that they have a half square all the way around. See, it's finished off with a half square at the top or bottom, whatever, I guess it's the top. Makes it, they did that so much then, I don't know why.
Why would you say intentional? You said that maybe you've seen a lot that have one square that's different.
Well, there's a theory, or they say, that some people, some of the old-time quilters, wouldn't dare quilt a perfect quilt because that would be an insult to God. Only God is perfect, so they would deliberately make mistakes in their quilts. I doubt if anyone thought that this was the quality of the quilt that would be so perfect that they did that deliberately. But there seemed to be a lot of that in the old quilts, so I don't know. That's just a color variation, and I had assumed maybe that one faded. I don't know. There's one little square of it that didn't fade that is still black, which made me think the other half was at one time black because they wouldn't have pieced in a black with a brown. It's a kind of a toast color almost, a brown. One square is sort of brown. And I would just assume that that one color had faded, but I don't know. But I'm real happy. I'm real sentimental about this quilt. When I redid that bedroom in there, I had no idea this quilt would work on it. And I just love it in there, so if I had thought, I would have made the room to go around the quilt, but it came out that way without planning it.
How many quilts do you think you own?
Probably 10 or 15, counting the ones that are in progress.
And you have more than that one in progress that's on your frame?
Yes, I do.
Tell me about them.
There's one that I'm very sentimental about and I can't work on right at this time. I had started one of neckties. It's a kind of a crazy quilt square of my husband's neckties when the wide ties went out of style. There's a lot of fabric in them, so I started one of neckties in a crazy quilt form, and it's set together. There's a square in the middle and then another triangle that goes around it to make a larger square with yellow moire that is set together with. And I plan on setting the squares together with maroon velvet. And but at this point in my life, I'm not ready to work on it yet. I have another one that is green and navy. I wanted to fool with green and navy a little bit. And this is rather an original design, and I haven't named it yet because I think it'll be original if I don't run into one like it when I get through. I'd have to get a square to really describe it. But I wanted to fool with the green and navy. It's another one of those things that I don't know where I'd ever have a place to use it, but I just wanted to fool with those colors. And it's on the shelf right there. That's about it.
You have some in your mind you'd like to start to make when you have time?
100.
What, for instance? What patterns or what appliques or what? Oh, tell us about the butterfly you were working on. The trapunto.
Trapunto butterfly. This is just quilting. It's a butterfly. I just put it on a pillow just to experiment with. It is a butterfly, and it is quilted two rows close together where I can run a cording through it and give it a trapunto or padded raised effect. And I'm quilting the butterfly in brown with large